This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to More Than Amused Podcast, a podcast all about women and the arts, hosted by Stani and Sadie.
Join us as we explore what it's like being a female artist, examine modern day problems, and educate ourselves and you on important and forgotten female artists of the past.
Hello, and welcome to More Than Amused Podcast. My name is Sadie, and I'm just here alone right now to introduce you our episode today. I'm really excited about this episode. If you are maybe clicking on this episode for the first time ever, we are a podcast that talks about women and the arts. And for this month, we have a specific theme in honor of Women's History Month, which is March Madness, aka our very own celebration of feminine rage. And with our theme, we wanted to focus on different mediums of art and how this theme is represented. So today we have a very fun special interview with our resident expert, Hall Rockefeller. She's actually the founder of Less Than Half, which is an education and advisory platform dedicated to raising the profile of female artists. We've had her on the podcast in the past. She is amazing and like just knows so much about the visual arts, definitely where my own personal blinders are. So it was a real honor to have her come on and talk to us. And then later this week, actually, it'll be a podcast episode with just Stani and I. And Stani will be talking a little bit more about feminine rage in movies. And yeah, we're just really excited to dive into this more. So I hope you enjoy our chat with Hall. And then, of course, check back later this week for an additional episode. Happy March Madness. Well, thank you so much, Hall, for coming back on More Than Amused. This is, I think, the third time we've chatted. And we always love having you back, and especially with our theme of March Madness. Before Stani, you hopped on the call, she was telling us that March Madness is a big deal where she's at, because I don't remember, it's like UConn, is that you said?
UConn. The men's team, well, both of the teams are amazing.
Yes.
But the men's team is number one. Yeah. And I live.
Oh, awesome.
Not basketball associated, obviously, but we're all about women's rage, feminine rage. And thank you so much for coming on and being our visual artist expert. If we need visual artist help, we're always going to you. And Less Than Half, it's amazing everything that you do. So again, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Yeah, and I do think it's the third time. Once first, it was all about Linda Nochlin, and this is such an interesting subject. I think that the more I looked into it, the more excited I got. So I'm very happy
share
just like a little sliver of my findings.
Yeah, no. That's how we feel about it. Like, that's why we had to theme a whole month around it. There's so much, actually, when you dive into it. And I'm really excited to hear what you found.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I almost think there's like a spectrum of rage and anger. And I think that we interpret anger is coming from women what we interpret it as anger from women is sometimes not anger. I think it sort of starts in a place where just sort of like general common courtesy, when women demand it, we think of that as anger. I think of it sort of like, if you're not being pleasant and smiling, you must be angry. Like, of course, everyone knows that, you know, the guy in the street telling you to smile. That sort of thing. As if, like, if your face isn't in like a grin, you're probably an angry bitch.
And
that type of thing, I think, you know, of course, art is a reflection of life. So that happens a lot in art, where a woman is getting criticized for just demanding respect. That she deserves. I've interacted with different artists where I've asked them to do things, or, you know, have talked to them about just interacting with the art world generally. And they sometimes, you know, I'll get a response where it's like, I'm not, you know, I won't do something without pay. And
yeah,
that feels like, oh, well, she's just ungrateful, angry, you know, mm-hmm. woman artist. She should just know that, you know, exposure is important. And it's like, no, people yeah. do work. You know, mm-hmm. this is their profession. They deserve to be paid for it. And that's not an angry thing. I think particularly right now about the artist Adrian Piper, who is a Black American artist. She has not been in the United States for like several decades because she sort of disagrees politically mm-hmm. with the way the country is, especially in relation to race and gender. And she's lived in Germany for decades. And she didn't even come back for her her retrospective at MoMA, which was like 5 years wow. ago or something.
Wow.
She like Zoom conference in to answer questions. And that to me, like, you could look at that as being like, oh my God, like she is so, you know, that's anger.
Yeah. yeah.
But
you can put a lot of like qualifiers on that would like diminish very valid feelings.
Totally. Exactly. And I think especially there's even more of a trope or like a stereotype of like the angry Black woman. I think mm-hmm. that's something that is even more sort of emphasized and unfair. So yeah, I think that's sort of like the beginning of the spectrum. It's like, it's not actually anger. It's just like valid concern
yes.
and mm-hmm. actions in reaction to that concern. She has actually at the retrospective at MoMA, I really loved it because there are like little things you could take home with you. And one of them was this like little card. You know, she's a sort of performance artist, very philosophically informed. She had a PhD in philosophy. I mean, she's still alive, has a PhD in philosophy from Harvard. And you really get a sense of that like, deep, deep thinking,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of, you know, I think it would be interesting to talk later about like the difference between, you know, anger as like an emotion and then like intellectual anger, because I think
yes.
I think mm-hmm. a lot of women feel like they have to sort of step away from the emotional part and
yeah.
contextualize their anger in like intellectual or philosophical ideas or even ways of expressing it, because like emotional anger is what is ignored, especially from a woman.
And also yeah it's how can I make sure that it's still taken seriously and that people are listening? And like, if it's emotional, then it could be seen as reactionary and, yeah, not as valid. So I think that's a really good
yeah.
point.
Well, even I know we've Absolutely. Covered before, like, the history of hysteria and, like, how entwined that is with women's anger. But it's crazy how many times when women are showing valid emotions, they're still considered hysterical by, like, the media and everything. It's showing that it really hasn't changed that much on how women are viewed when they show anger.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's right, interesting, exactly. way of like intellectualizing it then. So then
yeah.
you can present it prettier, perhaps,
right.
in a different way. I love that.
Exactly. So I'll just finish what I was going to say about,
yeah.
you know,
because
I've said my thing. But anyway, at the retrospective, there were these little cards that she was a performance artist. She is a performance artist. So a lot of her work is about like being like on the ground, like pointing things out, like in real time, you know, pointing out hypocrisy and racism. And sexism in real time. So I wish I had it with me, but I have this little tiny card and it's like, basically you're supposed to take it with you and you could like hand it to anybody when, you know, say you were at like a bar and some guy was like talking to you and you didn't want him to talk to you. You hand him this card and it said like, don't bother me. I'm here because I want to be alone, or so, something like that.
Okay.
You know, even that, like if you handed that to someone in a bar, they think you were total crazy bitch. But you know, it's just like, I want to be left alone. Is that too much to ask? So I think that mm-hmm. little card was a really great sort of the most innocuous thing, like a tiny little piece of paper with like printed on it these words. And
yeah,
I think that she probably thought of as like, oh, that's anger in some way or another.
No, I really love that, just the idea of classifying things as anger that's not, when in reality it's just anything that's slightly against the grain, anything
right.
that's taking a stance. And yeah, I really love that.
But then, of course, there is real anger.
Of course.
There's a lot of that. I think that like the golden age of that is of, you know, real emotional anger is probably, you know, the 1970s and the feminist movement. Just the various sort of like pieces of performance art where the lines really get blurred between like political action and art and performance. You know, there's an artist, Suzanne Lacey, who did a like a multi-day sort of action slash, I don't even know if you could, it is an art piece, but it sort of doesn't feel like an art piece, where she had a map of Los Angeles and there were stamps of where rapes had occurred in the last 3 weeks. And then she just had, you know, people come and stamp where they had been, you know, assaulted and tell their stories. And I'm sure, you know, I don't think there are recordings of that, but I'm sure it veered into anger or into sadness.
Absolutely.
Into a lot of like real,
like,
raw emotion.
How do you think maybe art before like the first and even second wave of feminism, before it became more mainstream, how do you think, do you have any examples of ways that women or a certain piece did demonstrate feminine rage and anger? Like I said, before feminism was something that was at least a little bit more widely accepted, you know, in like the late 20th century.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I immediately think of Artemisia Gentileschi. And her, you know, images of like beheading Judith.
Yes.
Beheading Holofernes. That being, you know, pretty, I never want to like read biography totally into her work, but of course she was, you know, raped at the hand of her teacher, and she was put on trial. She was put on trial to prove her, you know, I don't know, purity in some way. I mean, she wasn't pure in that way anymore, but to sort of test whether she was lying about the incident. But yeah, that is very clear. Even other artists, I think of especially Baroque artists. So she was, you know, of the Baroque, but there are other Baroque artists, Elisabetta Cerami. There are images, because the Baroque was so animated and it was so dramatic already. I think that, you know, I'm absolutely not a historian of that era, so I'm probably reading a lot of like my 20th century, 21st century ideas onto it. But like, there were a lot of, because there was already energy and animation in those images, I think they're probably, like, I can see this one image, and I'm pretty sure it is Elisabetta Cerami, of someone in mythology, a woman like toppling a man into a well. And I don't know the story, what it's depicting exactly, but you know, even that, like the energy of that, which is already sort of like an aspect of the art movement at that moment, really allows for that expression of anger or of some sort of revenge or whatever. So I think that's just a really lovely, but clever way of sort of like masking these things.
No, that's really cool. Do you think that like then the reception of art pieces has changed over time, or what, or even like more historically versus like now, what do you think is like the public reception? I mean, not even public, but even critic reception, you know, of things like that showcase that.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this as a, thinking of the 70s as being this sort of pinnacle, and then us sort of like receding from that for the last like several decades. I think of like the like feminist art in the 80s starts to become like a lot more layered behind, as we were saying, those like intellectual sort of interpretations, and it gets a lot sort of colder. Like if you think about like Jenny Holzer's truisms, the, you know, whatever, abuse of power comes as no surprise, or all of those statements, and Barbara Kruger too, you know, your gaze hits the side of my face, or you know, any number of her sort of very pithy, very, you know, powerful statements.
Yeah.
But the hand of the artist comes out, and like the identity of the artist comes out. Like even in Artemisia Gentileschi, like she's painted herself as Judith, whereas you have a statement saying something, you know, very emphatic about about the state of the world, about, you know, misogyny or whatever, but it's unclear who's made it. And like that artist, not only like is she not referencing herself, but she's also, you know, she hasn't taken a brush and you know, mm-hmm. her handwriting isn't in it. Her mark isn't in it. And I think that, yeah, I think that's very much like what the 80s and onward were concerned about, like conceptual art and much more like that was definitely the trend. So I can see why the artist wanted to be like, well, look, like I am part of this movement. Like I am going to be taken seriously. And so I'm going to sort of filter this all, this feeling, this anger, this emotion or whatever through a different lens to be taken seriously.
Interesting. What do you think it was then about like the 70s? Why was that the pinnacle, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this,
I wonder, that's what I'm like, I wonder if it's like after that people were like, jaded of like, oh, and nothing happened. What happened in history that maybe caused that to feel less personal?
I'm always thinking about like, you know, we've talked about this, the kind of recession of feminism in the 90s and early 2000s. I kind of wonder if it's maybe like that too, where it's just like it became a dirty word, you know, people had to start intellectualizing it more to kind of hide that because people were sick and tired of hearing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's, yeah, absolutely. That maybe it was, you know, too much.
Yeah.
That anger was, yeah, like they, some sort of backlash.
The raw emotion was a little bit too strong that people were like, not that.
Yeah.
Not like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wonder how, just throwing the question back at you, I feel like there isn't as much female anger on display. I wonder also if, you know, the 80s actually were sort of a moment where the art market really started to blow up and art was being traded much more as a commodity. And then that has only continued. So I wonder if there's a connection between those things. And anger isn't saleable, especially female anger.
And especially if like the focus was like, oh, cool, we can sell these things and make money. Then like that's the focus as opposed to like, how can I evoke my strong emotions into the art piece? Like, I guess that would make sense of like, well, if the emphasis is what I can sell. Yeah. Right. Let's ignore that and make art that is sellable. Yeah.
Right. Interesting. And I think that, I think that goes along with like girl boss feminism and the sort of feminism is, you know, I think the 80s would definitely support that, like the power suit, like the woman who's like, okay, I'm gonna be like one of the guys now, like I can be, you know, the powerful CEO, I can make money, I can, you know, be, I think sort of success and power became what feminism was after rather than I think it's sort of like the lean in kind of philosophy.
Yes.
Yeah. Be more male rather than like express and accept being female.
I guess that's the thing about feminine rage. It is inherently feminine.
Both of you are trying. You have to allow that to be feminine in some way or another.
Exactly.
If you ignore that, then to become more masculine, to fit into the man's world. Yeah. It's different. It changes it. And that's what, like, I think you have to actively suppress in order to thrive, if that's your focus.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
No, that makes sense with the 80s.
So I wasn't around then, so I don't know.
That's true. This is pure speculation. A very good point. So you said with today then, like, can you think of any, like, more modern? I know you mentioned, you know, the exhibit from the MoMA just a couple years ago. Was it a couple years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, probably 2017. Yes.
Okay, awesome. But yeah, any other like examples of like modern art in the more recent years that you can see of like someone expressing that feminine rage or anger?
Yeah, let me think. You know, I just think, I don't know, I feel like especially in the last couple of years, I just read a great article about like why sort of like girly sort of feminine, very, you know, like bows and other and you know, Mary Janes and things like that, all these sort of like very girly, and you know, Barbie too, and Pink and Barbie, mm-hmm. and all this stuff that has been very, very popular for women in the last couple of years has been because being an adult female is just so unappealing.
Yeah.
Of course we would go back to trying to be little girls, because mm-hmm. that was more fun than like having to fight for, you know, bodily autonomy and yeah. all of this stuff. So I think that like in the face of, you know, you can go sort of two directions. You can go angry, which feels, yeah, more sort of active. And then, or you can like sort of revert to something where that feels mm-hmm. safe. And I think that for whatever reason, we've like chosen safety rather than anger. And I don't know. I when I think of like contemporary art, I think of like really, like I think of like Anna Wyatt, like really just sort of like, you know, there's like sadness and in her work, but you know, mostly it's just sort of like this, you know, oh, I'm a millennial, you know, there's not a lot of challenge in it. I think of like there being a lot of interior spaces that are very popular to paint in contemporary art. Or there's like fantasy, like imagining alternative realities, like like I think like Afrofuturism is really big. You know, imagining like, okay, well, this sucks, so what would be better? How about this world that doesn't exist, either in like our fantasy of being young again, or our fantasy in like being in a, you know, a different planet as a different, you know, race of people almost. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really see much anger.
That's so interesting though, because I, especially like with last year with like the Barbie movie and Taylor Swift and Beyonce, there was like so much like, this is the year of girl. And that was so fun, of course, but like, that's such an interesting point of the idea of like, you know, we're dealing with things now and it's like, how do you respond to it? And like, I don't know what's better or worse, but it's like, that is an other end of the spectrum where instead of being angry and saying like, no, like this is what needs to change, it's like, well, let's go back to when I did last feel safe. And I felt really safe when I was a child, and embracing those things, which like, it's great that we're, you know, not shaming those things anymore. And it's interesting. I think we're all like responding to like, you know, I at least personally would like shame myself growing up of like, oh, this is lame that I'm doing this when that was just girly, you know?
Right. Yes. So
it's like both, you know, sides of the same coin. But I think that's like really interesting that it's like, that's actually reverting to where it's safe instead of maybe being angry.
I almost wonder too, like, this is spitballing, but like talking about kind of taking the safe option might be because like you talked about, this isn't a fun era to be a woman, and it doesn't feel safe. And I think especially like post Me Too and realizing that it did some good, but it didn't change as much as I think a lot of us were hoping it would. Yeah. Especially like overturning of Roe v. Wade, like maybe people are afraid to kind of express that indignation again because people are like, we're sick and tired of hearing about it. And so it kind of is the safe option again.
No, I think you're probably right that once you've tried so many times and you're just so clearly rejected.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to sort of like the law and precedent. I mean, the overturning Roe v. Wade was just a sort of shocking, like, it's sort of like not fine. It's one thing if you have attitudes that are a certain way, but it's the sort of like entrenching. And also because it was just such a, you know, shocking reversal of precedent.
I mean,
the law is the ground that we're standing on, and that was just pulled out. So it makes sense, I think.
Yeah,
the energy for anger is not there because it's been expended.
Like, you can only really be angry for so long before it doesn't feel useful anymore.
No, that's true.
Exactly.
Do you feel like the art market at this point, if there were to be like a renaissance of feminine rage, would it be something that could work in that area and space?
I mean, this is part of the reason why I am so much of an advocate for getting more women into the art market as art buyers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like, I call it matronage, you know, taking back that word, becoming matrons of the arts. That is you know, I think it's probably a pretty big ask to get a male art collector to put an image of feminine rage above his couch.
Yeah.
But I think a woman could find, you know, solidarity in that. And mm-hmm. I think that the buyer, not to say there aren't enlightened men out there, but I would say the buyer for works like that would be more likely to be someone who also felt kind of that kind of anger.
Yeah.
So yeah, if they're more, if we can have like a renaissance, or not even a renaissance, if we can just have a blossoming of female collectors, maybe feminine rage will become more in vogue.
I love that phrase, the matron of the arts.
I do too.
I want to be a matron of the arts. Yeah.
You gotta own it.
Own it. Matron of the arts. Yeah. I guess that was honestly when you just said that, I was like, oh yeah, patron of the arts. That is like masculine. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I like totally never even internalized that. Like, that's totally. Not just the word. That's like the masculine version of that. Yeah. Whoa.
Exactly. No, it's one of those. I mean, I've got, and I wish I had my hat here, but I have a hat that says it should.
That's awesome.
Oh, I love that. That's cool. Need that hat. Matron of the arts. Amazing. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on? If not, we can wrap up. If you do have more, we will take more.
Yeah. Oh, I guess contemporary way, I think of, I mean, this isn't artists, but like the soup throwing, you know, throwing food at art, that's become so popular these days. Like that's anger and art.
Yeah, that's just true.
It's just, yeah, I'd have to think more about that. But certainly that's a place where it shows up. And it's, I guess it's the sort of place, the prestige of certain pieces of art and the respect that they gain, like heightens, I don't know, that anger butting up against it. To me, those instances are so interesting because there is this sort of like sterility to the works. You know, they're behind glass, they're like behind ropes, they're you know, sort of perceived to be like impermeable and like sort of never changing. And then you have this like the contrast of course, like food and sort of dirtiness of that, but also the anger and the emotion that comes up against that. And you know, we are used to having art be like an expression of like human whatever emotion experience, but you really see how the art museum has like leached a lot of that.
That's such a good point. I feel like that makes me feel a little bit better about the soup throwing. I've been kind of like, what the heck?
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, it's performance art.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, there are a lot of women who are those protesters. There are a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't women, but So I think that was one of my pieces.
That's an interesting.
Notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
And then I just wanted to show this work, which I think is a great expression. This is the goddess Kali. It's by Sutapa Biswas. And, you know, it's this sort of, she's sort of like a warrior goddess, which, you know, exists in various, you know, like Athena is a warrior, like a god of war, goddess of war.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting when you have the female sort of destroyer, but she's sort of holding machete and, she is supposed to be this, that is, the artist has depicted herself, but this sort of destroyer, Indian-British artist, and she's sort of just, you know, decapitated. You see these, like, decapitated heads, like, white men, and she's holding this head, and she's sort of destroyer of colonialism, and it's quite a good work. That's from 1985.
And what is that book that you have?
Oh, this is a book, it's called Visibly Female. It's just an anthology of essays.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
I think it was from the 80s, but yeah.
No, yeah, I love that.
So yeah, that was my last. One of the questions was, do you have specific works? And
yes.
I think that's a particularly interesting work.
No, yeah, thank you. That. And I feel like you've given us so many like great specific examples of like artists and works as well. So thank you so much. I personally, like, that is where my blinders are with the podcast, is like current visual art world. Right. So
yeah,
thank you for being our resident expert at this
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. No, exactly. I'm always happy to fill in those blanks. Another recommendation would be this book, Art Monsters, Ooh. Unruly Bodies and Feminist Art by Lauren Elkin, which is, yeah, all about, I mean, definitely about anger, but
yes.
also about just sort of not fitting into the female mold, the sort of expectation of being pleasant, of being a wife, of being a mother, of being, you know, not making waves as a, as a woman artist. So I think that's a great read.
Oh,
and that came out like last year.
Oh, perfect. Cool. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We probably should have started with this. But before we wrap up, do you want to tell us just what like feminine rage means to you personally?
That's a really good question. I think it has a lot to do with, I think I personally grew up with, you know, I went to an all-girls school for up until senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I never like questioned my ability or my intelligence. I think I was, as my parents also encouraged, you know, they really honored that, that piece of myself. I wouldn't say they, I think that I was, you know, that was a like important facet of who I was and my identity. And I think my parents recognized that and that it was important to me. And they also thought that I was intelligent, which I appreciated. And so for that reason, I think that for me, feminine rage comes from this like severe disconnect between, and this is like when I get angry in life, it comes from a severe disconnect between like what I know to be the truth about like women being like so fundamentally capable and equal, and then the way that that's clearly not recognized in the world. And when I, you know, I am a pretty like calm person. I am pretty, you know, introverted, but the thing that can like snap me into anger is when I'm underestimated, especially by a man, but like in conversation or like when something, when clearly there's something that I'm being read through like lens of like a stereotype or whatever. And yeah, that just sets me off. So yeah, I think it's like, yeah, trying to fill that gap between like what I know is true and what people for some reason see. And yeah, I would say like I have no doubt in my mind about the validity of women. And that's like the core of it. It's just sort of like, how are you seeing the world differently from me? Because this is like, this is the truth. So that's a good way to end, I guess.
Thank you. And then last, of course, but not least, where can people find more about what you're doing? What would you like to shout out?
Well, my company is called Less Than Half. I can't believe I honestly should have mentioned the Gorilla Girls because they are like the most. I mean, they are. They're very angry and rightly so. But yeah, the Gorilla Girls. Less Than Half comes from one of their posters, but my company's called Less Than Half. You can find me at lessthanhalf.org. And yeah, I have all sorts of things. I'm developing these different courses to teach people about women artists. If you want to learn how to collect art or learn how to find affordable art, like I've got resources and all. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much
for coming back and yeah, talking about being angry with us.
No problem. That was a lot of fun. And as I said, you gave me a lot to think about. So
good.
I'll be reflecting on this for March and beyond.
Awesome.
That's the goal.
Yes.
Welcome to March Madness.
Amazing.
Whenever, someone in the talking about basketball, like, no. We're rebranding it.
Exactly.
Feminine rage.
Excellent. I love it.
Perfect.
Hi, it's me, back to just wrap up the episode. And a reminder, if you're here at the very end, that we are still selling our March Madness merch that we are so excited about. It is currently available on our website, just morethanamusepodcast.com. So go check it out. And a reminder that you can now watch our episodes on YouTube. So subscribe, like, follow, leave a rating, and we'll be back later this week. Bye.